So let's start this presentation, which will be about modern deployment for embedded Linux and Internet of Things. Basically, the presentation will be more about security, relate to security topic, and let's discuss it. So this is the agenda. We'll first have a background, then discuss a bit embedded Linux and IoT security, discuss some kernel hardening, kernel self-protection project, have a look at lightweight containers, then discuss some systemd sandbox model, if you use systemd in embedded Linux, of course, and have a last topic as on software update mechanisms, which is right now a hot topic on IoT. So first, background. Today we have today Linux runs everywhere, so most of us have at least 3 or 4 devices at home running Linux. There are a lot of also IoT based on Linux. And in this topic, when we discuss IoT, we mean that IoT devices that are running Linux, that are smart gateways, that are connected to internet, whatever device that runs, of course, Linux stack. So we are seeing a tendency today that most embedded Linux apps or IoT apps are getting more and more complicated. They look more like the PC apps. We are seeing also a switch a bit from the big data science fields and all the these fields that have to treat a lot of data. They have a lot of devices connected, and they have to stream and treat all this data, which means that they have more. There is more of more programmers from this field that are coming to the embedded Linux programming field. Personally, I have seen that there are apps that for IoT that are written in JavaScript. They use Node.js. They use Golang. Most of the apps developed there, they rarely use C or something. C is only used to like for a system service or something. Most of the apps are based on Golang or Node.js or JavaScript. This is the last tendency from the last months. And the important note that we did notice is that most of the developers here don't really care about the low level of the embedded system. So usually they lack a bit of the background on these devices or systems, but also the low layer of the system is too complex. So if you have like, this is a typical embedded Linux system image. So you have the apps where each vendor has its value there, and you have the runtime, which is basically, if you make your embedded Linux based on Yocto, I guess everyone who has dealt with embedded Linux knows at least Yocto. So if you are using Yocto, you basically have the hardware, and then you have some layers that define your embedded systems. Embedded system, or basically you can define the Linux kernel, which version, with which configuration, and then you have your user space root apps, and then you can have on top your app. And basically this is the runtime is usually too complex for most of apps developers that develop on JavaScript or Node.js or for everyone. This layer is really too complex. And that layer, it's complex, but also they use it because it's open source. So anyone can just plug in that runtime and he can just have like an embedded system. However, as I said, it's too complex because it constitutes most of the code. So basically, you have a big pile of code, the code base that runs with higher privileges. The kernel runs with higher privilege CPU hardware. On ARM, you have the privilege levels. So basically, the kernel runs on in x86. You have the rings. The hardware CPU are called rings, where there are different rings where the kernel, the operating system, and the user space are separated. In ARM, you have the privilege level, and basically on ARM, the kernel was on privilege level 1, which is the higher hardware privilege. You have the user space that runs at privilege level 0. And on top, you have most of the apps that are developed, that are deployed, they also run with higher user privilege, with software privileges. So My experience, there are most of these apps are not sandboxed, and they run with higher privileges. And the other bad thing is there are no planned software updates mechanism. Most of the vendors or most of the constructors, they just use a hack, or you can say a local software to update the embedded system, but usually that's not perfect. So it can't resist to the future. So this is an example of the bugs and vulnerabilities lifetime. So this is this analysis was done by Case Cook. It was on Ubuntu server, of course, not on embedded Linux systems. It was on Ubuntu. It was done by Case Cook. And it shows the lifetime of vulnerabilities from where they were introduced to where they were fixed or patched. So we have critical vulnerabilities. There were like three. It took them like 5 years to discover critical vulnerability. These critical vulnerabilities allow at least to compromise the full system. We have like, you can see the figures. So we have high vulnerabilities, which like 6 years. We have medium vulnerabilities, also 5 years, and low. And one important thing here is these vulnerabilities, mostly they were patched, so they were fixed. But on embedded systems, on IoT devices, most likely these vulnerabilities, if they are there, most likely they will never be patched. So this is another figure also from Case Cook analysis. So you can see that basically this was done from the kernel 2.6 to 4.8, and you can see the figures from high vulnerabilities to medium to low. So in embedded devices, IoT vendors, or even in Android, there are a lot of types of vulnerabilities, and most of the vulnerabilities that always come, even in when you have like, if you have a special hardware and your vendor is developing special drivers for you, usually one of the vulnerabilities that always come is when you transfer data from between the user space and the kernel space. So there are drivers which have to call from user space to kernel space to transfer back and forth the data. And even in Android, there's this statement from Sami, which is who works for Android security, and he says that since 2014, the missing or invalid bounds or checking has caused about 45% of Android kernel vulnerabilities. And this is only the kernel. So in Android, more, and I guess most of these vulnerabilities or bugs were in third vendor, maybe in the kernel, but also in third vendor drivers. Also, we have user space vulnerabilities or bugs or whatever. So yesterday, talk about botnet wars from Drew Mosley. He did go through all these details. Basically, he did speak about also the brick bot, which targets IoT devices from cameras to anything. And this bot, basically, just doesn't use any zero-day exploit. This bot just connects to telnet port and tries like with devices that have like default password, and just probes there. And it, according to the source, they said that this bot had affected like more than 2 million devices. And if you can see the figures, basically it just tries to erase the disk and make your device useless. So, well, for this, that's why our topic, when we speak about model deployment of embedded Linux, basically we mean, in this topic, in this context, we mean how to secure your Linux and, of course, to keep it alive. So first, we will start by the kernel. There's this project, there's the kernel hardening, and there's the kernel self-protection project. The kernel self-protection is a new project. It's managed by Case Cook. Basically, the kernel hardening, where you have to apply some access controls, some other, the kernel self-protection is more than that. Basically, it tries to kill attacks, exploitations, and it tries to make the kernel a bit smart so it can protect itself. There is the link if you are interested to check the project. Usually in the kernel, when there's a sophisticated attack, usually they try to use multiple bugs and vulnerabilities to exploit. So they share multiple vulnerabilities and exploits to get root access. But to achieve that, they also need to know the target, the memory layout, what's running, what protection. They need to build together information. So the objective of the kernel self-protection project is to reduce these exploitation techniques, to reduce the attack surface. And most of this comes, of course, from gear security, packs, patches, and it was adopted and modified and upstreamed. So first we will see a bit of kernel configuration that can be easily activated and make sure to protect your embedded Linux or your IoT device. So as I said before, there's that the user space, kernel space transfer that most of third-party vendors abuse or misuse, and this presentation about and this configuration, config hardened user copy, which was added lately into the kernel, allows to perform extra size. So the kernel before used to check the user space, but there were not that much checks from the kernel. And now if you activate this configuration and there are some misuses by the driver or something, most likely your device will bug, because this configuration allows also to check bugs or misuses of the kernel transfer between user space and kernel space. There's also config 45 source, which allows to also harden some strings and memory functions. There's the config strict kernel read, write, execute, and basically this allows to protect the kernel memory, which is like the only either write or execute, not both. There are other configuration, you can all see them. There's also the config mmap min, which is basically you can use to protect your kernel from null dereferences bugs, which can be used to exploit. So someone from user space can just map a zero address, and he can just put some shellcode there and the kernel if it tries to execute that. So there are all these protections will allow you to protect your embedded Linux or IoT. And we have all this guide, but there are more, so you can just check the guide, which is like linked above, and you can just activate all these options. So right now, we are also working part of the kernel self protection project. We are working on modernization of proc file system. Basically, most of Linux users know the proc file system. The proc file system is like a virtual file system, which is an interface between from the kernel to allow you to check kernel data, check a lot of information about your system. But right now, the implementation, the internal implementation is not that optimal, so it doesn't allow to improve security. Right now, we are working to improve proc, so to allow multiple separate instances of proc file system. Right now in the kernel, when you mount a proc file system inside the same PID namespace, usually it's just a mirror, so it's not a total different file system. We are trying to improve that, and basically we did even achieve like a proc file system without the kernel files, so only proc and the processes, so you can just read the processes inside proc, and there will be no kernel files or kernel data, which basically prevents information leaks that can be used by exploits. We did implement this, and it also can be used by sandbox. It's in discussion, but maybe I think it will get in. So we also have automatic module loading protection. Basically, the kernel, the Linux kernel supports two module loading operations. There's the explicit one and there's the automatic one. The explicit one is only when you tell the kernel, please load this module. And the automatic one is when the kernel loads a module on your behalf. So you don't know, you just request a feature that is not supported and the kernel automatically loads it. And that's a nice feature of Linux, of course, because it allows to save a lot of use cases and users don't bother with that. But also attackers will abuse this. And there was this vulnerability that was like the DCCP vulnerability that has like 11 years old that can allow you to root exploit. There's also the X framework, which is an IP framework to do IPsec, which was used to exploit Ubuntu on security context contests. We are working on automatic module loading protection, basically to prevent this. So if you set a flag or to your inside your sandbox, this will prevent the kernel from loading any extra module, especially vulnerable ones or the ones that you don't trust. In most importantly, in embedded Linux, usually you should not allow loading extra modules at all, or only modules that you trust. So this patch is, I think version 5 is coming soon, and I think we had a lot of feedbacks, and thanks to the viewer, of course. So we are also working on the YAMA Linux security module, basically just to try to generalize its behavior, where it protects processes from accessing the memory or controlling other processes. So let's come back to Linux containers and lightweight containers. So first, why containers on embedded Linux? Most importantly, containers are a bit too heavy, but they allow to solve a lot of cases, like they allow modern deployment workflow, which is easy. They allow isolation of apps, and they allow also to do some host virtualization. There's an example, if you have been using Resign OS by the Resign guys, basically they are using containers to deploy embedded Linux devices. This is a typical image of Linux containers. You can see that Linux containers, they just use Linux kernel features. The thing for embedded Linux is that most of the container managers, they define a runtime format, which is a bit heavy for your embedded Linux. Some of them are like over-engineered. They have some features, some hacks to hide some other workarounds or some other misbehavior, and they have too much processes. So I took this picture from the CoreOS website, and basically you can just do a comparison here between containers, and you can see that each container tries to spawn another process, another systemd, spawn again rocket, and you see rocket may spawn and spawn other stuff. Same for Docker. So all this is a bit heavy for embedded Linux, so the solution is maybe in systemd, but let's see first why you should use systemd in embedded Linux. Otherwise, you may not need it at all. So if you use resource management, if you have at least more than 3 or 4 apps, if you want easy watchdog integration, if you need socket activation, most likely then you need at least systemd. And even more importantly, if you need some sandboxing mechanism, then you can use. Otherwise, you can just go with the simple init and that's it. So to continue the talk about systemd in embedded Linux, the picture that we have is that we can just allow systemd to just spawn like a contained app. That's it. So without any spawn, without anything. Right now in systemd, there's already support for that. So we only use, there are different technologies to like emulate containers, but in systemd, we don't use most of it. We only use mount namespaces to just give an application a view of its file system. And mount namespaces are really cheap, so they don't cost that much. We have bit support for network namespace, but just to sandbox application and to disconnect internet access. I think one of the use cases that may come is that we integrate network namespace, so most embedded systems do need some network configuration. They can use the IP tool without using any extra solution. So all this is that this has the advantage that you don't have to adapt or use a container directly in your embedded system. And if you are already running systemd, you can just take full advantage of it directly. So you don't need any extra complexity from container managers. So I think Leonard gave a talk yesterday about the systemd sandbox model. So basically you can run, now in systemd, you can just have like apps contained with root image. So basically, you can just have a root file system for your app, and this can be deployed. Private devices, this can be on top of root image. So if you don't want to give access to your app inside the embedded system, if you don't want to give it access to real hardware or devices, most of the apps or most of the embedded Linux system, they need some watchdog access. You can use the bind path features, so you can bind the watchdog and make it accessible inside your sandbox. So your app can be sandboxed, but can also talk to watchdog. Recently, there was a new nice feature in systemd to support dynamic users. So everyone knows that Android apps, in Android, most of the app that run with different user ID. So with dynamic user, this allows to emulate a bit of that behavior where each app can run with different user ID. We have network sandboxes. You can all check them into our documentation. And we have also features to restrict kernel attack surface. However, all these features are opt-in. And basically, it's a bit difficult to specify, especially if we are coming from JavaScript users, Golang developers. So I think that systemd in the first was intended to experience the service developers, CSV experts, but now most of the users are also like apps users, containers, and I think that systemd needs to adapt. So basically, I think that we need to introduce a new runtime mode or something, and we need a new like permission model. I mean, access internet is so simple that no one has to go through all this to really disconnect like internet without using even network namespace. Privileged access internet can allow you to bind low ports and to do extra privileged network sockets. We can do admin system time, we can do admin system time zone, we can do, for example, admin system manager to access the systemd manager. We can just block apps from accessing systemd and that. And we are also discussing a new sandbox based on SecComp, where we will organize basically apps on what's the behavior of your app. So we will use like the contained apps and give it different access to the system. Either it wants like basic access to the system, or it may need privileged access, and we need to abstract that to make it more useful to our users. And the other feature, as I think that we need to improve systemd integration into embedded and IoT devices, because it's a bit big, I have to say too. Last topic is software update mechanism. So as I have said, the IoT devices are now exposed. There was the BrickBot, as I said, didn't even use a zero-day vulnerability. So even if you don't protect that simple thing, maybe you have first to start with this, protecting your telnet, protecting your ports before applying more complex security features. And it did hack like 2 million IoT devices. Of course, robust IoT devices need a robust software update mechanism. There are several requirements. They were already discussed in previous talks. The most robust mechanism is usually the dual boot partition, when you have two partitions and boot from this and switch from the other one. Right now, we have the CSync tool that may help to stream updates. It has also support for block layers. Liana has a talk after that, so we will discuss it more. There are also traditional tools like Xdelta, where you can just build on top of it. But they are most basic tools. There are also RDI solutions that are compatible with Yocto. There are the Mender solution to do software updates. There are the new tool, Wauz. I hope that I get the spelling right, sorry. And there is also the Resign OS updater that is part of the Resign OS system. The challenges is adoptions, how we can adopt this. And thanks to Daniel Mark and Diana Potting for some input, and that's it.
Hi. About your new security model for systemd, do you intend that there's some kind of baseline option which implies a bunch of the other settings, which can then be selectively overridden by specifying those settings anyway? Or
Could you repeat?
About your new security model for systemd. If you go a couple of slides back, you've got these new admin things.
No, this is still in discussion, so we are planning.
Yeah,
this is still in discussion.
I'm trying to understand what you meant. Do you mean these as some kind of security preset, which simply implies a lot of the other options, using a suitable default value, which you can then later override by specifying such options explicitly?
Yeah, maybe. So we are still in discussion, but maybe it will be that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
What's the outlook on your PID FS patches, when it's going to get in?
So we are still where the PID FS are like on top of the, there's already a branch, I think, yeah. So the PID FS are on top of my patches. We have already updates, but there's right now I was planning a new version, but there's a bug between the kernel and Dracut to boot the kernel. So I think just after this conference, we will submit another version of the patches. And we have like a lot of feedback from Case Cook and Andy Litmoski. And I think that most of the guys did agree on the patches. So I think that it's just a matter of time.
What is the time frame?
I can say. Sorry. Thank you.